Nina Cherry with Kong on 2SER. It's about 9:15 on the daily. And there are a lot of iconic objects in fairy tales, from Rapunzel's hair that can stretch down the entire length of a tower, to the woodsman's axe that dispatched the big bad wolf. But when it comes to what looms very large in fairy tales, something that often steps lightly beneath our notice are shoes. That's right, shoes hold a special place in many of our favorite fairy tales. I'm joined now by Rebecca Ann Rosario, an adjunct research fellow at Monash University and an expert in fictional footwear. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me. And I do love the analogy to stepping lightly.
Absolutely. So what is your personal favorite pair of fairy tale footwear?
That would actually be a pair of Cinderella's shoes, but not the one we're familiar with. It's actually by Mary Catherine Dolnoy, Finette Cendron. And she wears red velvet slippers with pearls embroidered on them. Well, I think those are my favorites.
So Cinderella's, you know, shoes in particular, I guess, is a good starting point because they're, you know, very well known. They're very iconic, and they kind of serve as the entire central tension of the story in a lot of ways, you know, searching for the slipper that fits. You know, why are they, you know, such a very popular and hold such fascination for people?
Oh, it's such a complex and difficult question, because why do shoes hold such a fascination? I think it's just something about... there's very beautiful objects, and they're also something that is tangibly connected to the wearer. Because once you wear a pair of shoes, no one else can quite fit them the same way.
Mm.
So I think there's that very close analogy between the body and the shoe, and I think that informs a lot of the Cinderella narratives, for instance. She's very much connected to her shoe.
And I know you mentioned in an article that you wrote that, you know, sort of the historical context informs a lot of these as well.
Yes, it does. People often think of fairy tales as being about a kingdom far, far away in a time long, long ago, but many of the fairy tales actually are very much written within the present, their present. And so you get a lot of references to popular figures of the time and particularly to the fashions of the time. So as you go through, the fashions change in the fairy tales themselves.
And are most of the fairy tales we're familiar with, you know, that have these shoes as sort of period, or is there quite a different range with an interesting sort of difference between them?
Oh, there's a long range of tales. I mean, we have, and also there's the oral and the literary tales, which is a whole other story because we've lost a lot of the oral tales, how they would have originally sounded. So we don't know if we're missing some of the shoes, for instance. But you can go back to, say, Basile writing in the mid-17th century, and then you'll find that the Grimms in the 19th century are writing very different stories. And then, of course, today Disney is totally rewriting a lot of the fairy tales. So this is something that always happens. Those fairy tales are always evolving.
Absolutely. And how widespread are we talking here? So, you know, like as you said, you know, there's quite a lot of these pairs of shoes that people can conjure up. But, you know, how well represented are they across fairy tale literature?
They're very well represented. They pop up in some unusual places. And one of the things I've always found very interesting in particular is that female shoes tend to be rated in terms of their beauty, whereas when you have a male character and he's connected with shoes, the shoes are usually very practical. So you'll have the seven-league boots that can carry him vast distances. You'll have Puss, who gets a pair of boots and can thus do his long con on behalf of his owner. So there's a big gender gap in particular there.
So I guess they reflect a bit of the, you know, social norms of our times as well.
Certainly.
And so you touched on this before that, you know, shoes, when you wear them, they fit you and they don't really fit anyone else quite the same way. Why don't things like, you know, like tailored suits or vests or hats kind of fit into it in the same way?
I think because you don't have the same sense of the impression as well, because this sounds slightly gross, but you kind of have those feet, the smell and everything embodies that shoe itself, which does sound terribly gross, but it is far more close to the body, whereas a tailored suit, for instance, can be cleaned.
Absolutely. Okay, so they kind of retain an impression of, like, the person. So they're very
put it the polite way, yes.
Put it, what if you put it the non-polite way?
Well, again, that would be, the physicality of the person, I guess you could say, the scent, again, that sense of who that person is and where they've walked. Also, shoes get dirty. And they get broken in by the person. So you will often find that shoes will have those little cracks and gaps from how the person actually walks in them.
Now, a lot of modern day fairy tales that we have are, in fact, rewritten from older fairy tales, and they've been changed and edited and kind of shifted in meaning. Mm-hmm. Has it been like new meaning given to shoes in these, or have shoes been kind of edited out, or has it kind of been changed around with the rewriting, or do they stay relatively constant?
They do change a lot. I mean, one of the examples could be the iconic pair, the glass slippers, for instance. When Perrault wrote them, he doesn't really give you a sense of how comfortable they were, although she does dance in them all night. But as time went on, people started reimagining those shoes and talking about them being this kind of special elastic glass. And then even in the recent Disney film, the fairy godmother says they're very comfortable, so she makes a special effort to make them comfortable. Mm-hmm. So you do have this change in how we perceive the shoes themselves.
And you even invoked a recent movie from, I believe, this year, the Black Panther film, well, as part of this tradition.
I was a bit sneaky there. there is a claim that we can count Shuri as being a Disney princess, mm-hmm. and when she actually invents a pair of shoes, I couldn't resist. But yes, there is that link still going on of that connection between clothing and fairy tale characters, because clothing really gives you a sense of status, of wealth, of class, and of actually what they're physically doing. So she invents shoes that are good for sneaking around in, mm-hmm. because that's what's important.
And Rekha, that's important because it's more about the practicality than the looks.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And Rekha, with your own like research or looking into this topic, is there any sort of area you're looking to explore next with this?
I'm just having a little break, to be honest, at the end, because I just published a book about fashion in the fairy tales.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that was looking more wide-ranging at all different aspects of fashion, like the dresses, etc. So in future, I'd like to go a little bit further and particularly look at what men wear, because it isn't written about as much in the older fairy tales, mm-hmm. but it's very fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that sounds very interesting. It's a much deeper topic than you'd expect. Thank you so much for joining us this morning to chat about it.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. And that was Rebecca Ann De Rosario, an adjunct research fellow at Monash University. They're finishing off our talk about fairy tale shoes.